welcome all podcast listeners or guests. This is obviously open mic, and I'm guest hosting for open mic this week. My name is Mike Creed. It was a really bad attempt at being funny. You know, the good thing about my jokes is you guys don't waste time laughing at them. So I always have that going for me. Yeah, it's been a while, hey? Been on the road, traveling. I'm road weary, everybody. So road weary. Back in Colorado for a hot second before heading back up to Canada for Canadian Nationals, where we have, you know, a couple guys, maybe three, depending on when the old Bellers kid comes out, but for now, two riders. Didn't want to leave the Canadians hanging there. A lot of times teams don't send a lot of support to Canadian Nationals, but you know, Rob and Chris and Zach, if he can make it, have been a really big addition to the team core group, and they deserve full support. So it'll be one for one staff to rider out there, and that doesn't really happen much. So on the podcast this week, Bo Hamburger. Bo's a little bit of a throwback. You have to be in the sport a little while to know Bo. Because Bo don't remember Nike commercials. Anyway, I was going to go down some cul-de-sac of a joke with Bo Jackson, but I'll just stop myself. Let me get into that cul-de-sac actually for a second. If any of you have seen the Bo Jackson 30 for 30 on ESPN, you will agree with me. I'll put money that you agree with me that was an amazing, amazing doc. If you haven't seen it, you already heard my testimonial about it, so you guys should go watch it. But this Bo rides bikes. He's worn the yellow jersey. Amazing Paul Mares. Yeah, and he was part of a cycling culture that was a bit unfortunate at the time. And yeah, it was good to have like a little, and he opens up about it and is candid. In fact, we talked so long about it that I have to make this a two-parter. So I'll give you part one, and I like it. It ranges, you know. It's not it's a bit all over the map. It's a lot of the philosophy of being a bike rider and choices we make and the people around us, and we progressive. We may have, you know, had a few adult beverages during this, so it's a long meandering, but I feel like a really good conversation. So hope you guys enjoy it. While I have you here, have I told you guys how kick-ass Cardo Cyclist and Laser Helmets are? Cardo Cyclist, continuing to sponsor the podcast. Really appreciate when you guys tweet at them, and especially Laser. Last podcast, Laser just gave away a helmet. There was like no contest. It was just like, I listened to the open mic, thanks Laser, and boom, that dude won a helmet. Like, what? WTF, am I right? So like, maybe this is just how we do contests now. Chris is just scanning the company Twitter account. You say something nice to him. No, it doesn't mean it's going to happen every time. It's going to happen rarely, but you could be one of those people. I mean, I'm going to say Chris gets maybe 100, on a good day, 100 app mentions from people who listen to the open mic. Yeah, 1 in 100 chance. That's better than the lottery. And maybe if you just blow up his Twitter account, annoy him. This is what I think you should do. Annoy my sponsors. Make them question why they do it. So annoy Cardo Cyclist and annoy Laser with nothing but good things, obviously. But just tell them over and over and over and over and over and over again how much you appreciate their support of this podcast. Let's see what else I got for you folks. Let's get back from Canada. You guys, I'm pretty sure I told you last week, and you well know by now, but we won the fucking national championships. I still can't believe it. I can't believe it. Not only that, We're leading the NRC. We're leading the UCI Americas Tour. I mean, and we still, as of this recording, have the Canadian National Champion. This is four jerseys by four different people. And, I mean, we got into Tour of Utah, and we got some other announcements down the pipe. I mean, this is great. I'm excited. Never in a million years imagined that this would be that we'd be this successful. And, I mean, I would love to take credit for it, but we got pretty freaking lucky. People at Smart Stop and Willier, Mercury Wheels, and Champion Systems, they've just been really helping this team grow. And I mean, it's like one of the, it's like when you're buying clothes for a child and it's just growing so big the second you buy it, it's you outgrow it. We're just, I feel like that with this team. We're just constantly outgrowing ourselves. So I'm rambling. Just want to tell everybody that how pumped I am with the team. I feel like I had something nice and poignant to say, but I kind of just lost the plot there. I'm tired, folks. Alright, let's just get to it, huh? Here's the podcast.
My point is, you're a clerk, paid to do a job. You can't just do anything you want while you're working.
Space alien revealed as head of Time Warner. Report stock increase. They print any kind of shit in this paper.
They certainly do. $3.
So your argument is that title dictates behavior.
What?
The reason you won't let me use your car is because I have a title and a job description. I'm supposed to follow it, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I saw one time that said, the next week the world is ending. And in the next week's paper they said, we were miraculously saved at the 0 hour by a koala fish mutant bird. Crazy shit.
So I'm no more responsible for my decisions here than, say, a death squad soldier in Bosnia?
Oh, no, that's stretching. You're not being asked to slay children or anything.
Yeah, not yet.
And I remember one time in a... I'm gonna break your fucking head, you fucking jerk!
I'm sorry, he meant to hit me.
Yeah, well, he missed.
Yeah, I know. Here, let me refund your money and we'll call it even, all right?
Yeah, I'll never come in here again. And if I see you again, I'm gonna break your fucking head open.
What'd you do that for?
Two reasons. One, I hate it when people can't shut up about the stupid tabloid headlines.
Oh, jeez.
And two, to prove a point, title does not dictate behavior.
What?
If title dictated my behavior as a clerk serving the public, I wouldn't be allowed to spit water at that guy. But I did. So my point is that people dictate their own behavior. Even though I work in a video store, I choose to go rent movies at Big Choice. Agreed?
Whatever, you know. Cheers.
Cheers.
just pushing the pedals.
So I don't know. How long have you been a director for?
A little bit more than 1 year.
A little bit more than 1 year. How did you get into
it? I got into it because I know Michael Rasmussen, yeah? For sure, we raced together, but
yeah.
And that sort of had a director last year that hasn't been a bike rider.
Yeah, so there's a gap.
And he stopped in March.
In the middle of the year of being director?
Even before the first race.
Oh, no.
But they couldn't work with him, and it didn't work out. And then Michael wanted me to be sports director, but I'm living in another part of Denmark.
Yeah.
And they like people to be in the office.
Yeah.
Even though it's
not necessary.
No. You know, yeah. Skype, emails,
everything's phones, email. Like, yeah.
I don't know.
If you have the internet, you can do it.
Yeah, you can pretty much do anything. Yeah. But then we check you as a part time, and then you're helping out. And I knew there was going to be a lot more because we had the guy that went to be sports director. He's actually our mechanic today here in the race.
Yeah.
So I knew that a lot of things would
come on the back. Yeah.
Come on the back of me, and that's okay because, you know, I stopped riding myself in 2006. Be doing all sorts of jobs, you know,
yeah.
Having my own company, running that and doing business and doing all sorts of things. And I'd like...
You have a few companies.
Yeah.
Like, you have wine.
Yeah.
You import wine and then...
Yeah, I import wine now and, do some small business, you know, like... But I had a construction company, but it wasn't really me. But now I tried it and, you know, I think it's good when you stop. Try something completely different just to see the world outside, to see that it's not that easy also, huh? On the other side.
Maybe. It's not as fair, huh?
No. I think... Anyway, it was good for me to be out of this small world, like, for... Yeah. Should have been 7 years. Yeah?
Yeah.
7 years.
Was it hard to be out?
No.
No?
No.
You were just tired.
I was really tired, you know. I had my doping case in 2001.
Yeah.
And from that on, it wasn't that funny anymore. It's like,
yeah.
I raced until 2006 and...
But just like with half a heart? Not really?
Nah, you know, that... I still knew that something was going on, even though I continued. Even when I came back, I wasn't banned or anything, but
yeah.
Just a case, and you know how it works. And it's not to defend myself because
no, I get it.
I just shouldn't have done it. But anyway, it's still hard for a person to be like everything you build up, you think your reputation, everything you've done since you've been a child is like take it and then just throw it apart. And so I was really messed up with psych. It was like I didn't have.
Did you resent it in a way because like you'd given it so much and then you still like? Did you feel like you needed it? Like, because I felt like that's the way I was. Like I felt that's why I started to resent cycling because I wanted to do other things, but I didn't know what. So I needed cycling for a paycheck, and then I feel like I kind of started resenting.
Nah, until the last day. I was a bike rider, I did my job, and I kind of enjoyed it. I remember maybe one of the last months that I knew I was going to retire, end of the year, 2006, and my daily training partner in Italy, he asked me, but how comes that you are still training so much, you know, you're going to stop?
Yeah.
I said, yeah, you don't get it. I'm training because I enjoy training still.
Yeah.
Just don't enjoy racing so much anymore, don't enjoy the world around cycling that much anymore, but the cycling part is always going to be a part of me. And so for me it was to be out of the cycling world was nice, but I miss cycling in a way. And maybe you also felt it like you kind of get used to suffering, you know, the daily hard training and all this, and that's like it's like drug for you. It's like your body needs it, and when you don't have it anymore, it's like something is missing. And I've been doing some marathons and trying to do something else, also doing a little bit of sports, so that's not missing too much. But then I put all my energy in business, and I thought that, I reckon that if I know where money is, I can grow passion. And after some years, I knew that this wasn't the case.
Yeah.
I knew that I had to go the other way around. Like, I've always been with cycling, that my passion for something eventually did that I could earn good money.
Yeah.
And then I started that, and then how I began to come into cycling again and doing other stuff, because I've been doing some things with cycling for the last like 2-3 years, but you know, I'm taking out companies on trips and to Tuscany or the Alps,
like touring trips. Yeah,
and doing trainings with them, and yeah, you know, every day, not bike riders but amateurs, business people do.
Yeah.
Because in Denmark, cycling is like, I think, the biggest growing sport.
Yeah.
Like everybody wants.
They say it's like the new businessman's golf.
It is. Yeah. It really is. It's like you have networking and you have all this kind of, and I had, was selling some bike clothes and some different stuff, and I make a business out of that. So it was, this was more my world.
It was your way to get back into cycling.
And that slowly I came back to it, but when I got the offer to really join the sport again, I was happy.
Yeah.
And I took it, even though I knew that it was only a part-time job and I had to earn my money otherwise, but I mean, then I was in. I could try it. I could try it. It was not a big risk. And then end of the year, last year, we agreed on I should be full-time this year. And yeah, been happy since that. You know, it's a small team. It's continental. It's not that big budget, but still. And no, probably also your team is run that like that. That you as a sports director doing mainly everything is like booking tickets, make sure if everything is in order. You know that the cars are coming in the right place and all this logistics stuff.
Yeah.
And maybe even dealing with some sponsors, and then you have to the riders, and so you have a lot of things to work with. It's like, it's not like in the big teams, you know, when you're a sports director, you have maybe 5 guys,
yeah,
you follow them, you have this program, you do these races, and
yeah,
that's pretty much it. In a way, that's maybe also nice because you're more focused on what you can do, but here you can enjoy it because now I know like almost all parts of having a team.
Yeah.
How you run the business in it, how the budget should be.
Yeah.
So one day if I choose and I find the money for it to start my own team, it's like, then you know a lot more about it.
Yeah, I think there's something to seeing. There's more, I think there's probably like more passion on smaller teams. Because, yeah, you know, nobody's getting paid that much money. Everybody's doing it because they want to be here. You get on the bigger teams, it's more like what you said. Sometimes your passion grows money, but you shouldn't just, I don't know, go into the big leagues and following just 5 riders. I mean, that's something, but it's when you're trying to balance, you know, 14 riders and.
Yeah, I know, but it's also that because now you really need all your skills. You know, it's like.
Yeah.
You have to stay focused all the time, and I'm enjoying it. And if you're not like in the big team, if you're not a team director or the team manager, or you're just one of the sports directors, like, yeah, most of the time you're just a driver.
Yeah.
It's like.
No, we do just drive bikes around most of the day.
And that's more or less it.
Professional bike caddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you don't have radio, you can't make tactics, really. I mean,
so much. But I don't know. That's for sure, we like this team to grow, and hopefully we do. We have some good prospects in it. But
how was your? Were you ever on a team like this growing up, or did you go from? What was the system like when you came through? Was it junior? Did they have under 23 then, or was it amateur?
No.
It was a junior amateur.
I was a junior, and then I was an amateur. I raced in France for like 2 years. part France and part on the national Danish team. Then in 91, I raced for a Spanish team, amateur team still, for 2 months, and then I turned pro.
With
TVM. Dutch team. So that was, but the system was different. That was, I don't know what kind of team it would be, because maybe couldn't be a world tour now, but still we always did the tour, the Giro, all the races we wanted to do, all the classics, and you know, so it's like,
yeah.
As a pro continental team now, you're not sure that.
Yeah.
But in those times we were. Because I think the structure and the money-wise, it was more like a pro continental team and not a world tour team.
Yeah.
But it was a good team to join because I straight away got my own chance to race.
Yeah, more opportunities.
And did when I was, the races suited me, but I was the team captain right away, so it's not like I have to grow up, like all these steps, like before was way different than now.
Did you always want to be a professional cyclist?
Yeah, no, it wasn't that I, on one point, like when I was a kid, I said, now I want to be a professional. I more or less always knew it. That was the way it was meant to be. Like, it was just like when you're a kid, you have these categories, and then you become junior, then you become amateur. It was just, and of course, then I.
It was simple.
Then I'm pro. It's like only the next step. It's nothing. I took a decision, or it's just I knew it. It was like I was pro for 16 years. So.
Now sometimes I feel like, because it was the same. Like I was junior, you won junior national championships. You won under 23 national championships. You just go pro. Like it was so quick. It felt like. Like, you never had the opportunity of, like, oh, what am I going to be when I grow up? It was just, it was like, so cycling chose me.
I didn't choose maybe, cycling. Maybe it's a little bit like that.
Yeah.
And some guys doing okay with it, I think I did okay with it. But also, maybe one day you wake up and say, I don't know, did I choose this? Or
yeah.
How did I end up here? And I think... Some guys, because I've always been like a, it's pretty strange because I've always been like a thinker, you know, thinks a lot about things and but that part I never thought about it. It's like I never just mainly took the decision. It was like maybe like you said a little bit, cycling chose me.
Yeah.
And but for me it was always been happy about being a rider even. And maybe also still define myself as a bike rider. I don't know. It's hard to get out of that. And even though when I meet people that it's Bro Hamburger, the bike rider. I used to be. I'm not anymore. But it's like, no, that's okay.
Yeah.
That's a good feeling still that people see me like that.
When you went to like Spain and what like. Because I'm totally ignorant to like basically anything Europe, because you know you're over in North America on a big island. Was going to Spain and France back then? Did it seem like completely foreign and weird to you, or was it because Denmark is so close to all these countries, it didn't seem so out of the normal?
No, it was pretty much out of the normal.
Yeah.
But it was the only way to become a professional.
Was that exciting, though? It was always... Because when I did it when I was a junior, like, it was so exciting to come and race, like, the Junior Tour of Austria or something.
Yeah.
Was it, like... I think that's how I mainly stayed with cycling.
It was like a Jugendtour.
Yeah.
And all these races. Yeah, because... I don't know. I might think that the passion about racing... was maybe the highest in the juniors. Is like it's just pure sport. It's nothing else. You just want to ride your bike. You just want to win. There's no money. There's no nothing that is like influence on you. It's just because of the sport.
I think that was some of the most dedicated I ever was when I was a junior.
Yeah.
I thought all you eat was like pasta.
Yeah.
Pasta and like cornflakes, and that's like the only thing I would ever eat. Nothing with fat, nothing with sugar, nothing.
No, just that's because when you've got, when you turn pro, there's a lot of things you have to think about, no?
Yeah.
Then you, it's work.
So yeah.
There's a lot of things you have to do, even though you're not always into it, like for the sponsors or I don't know. And then there's money. So it's always...
Well, it's you go, like when you're a junior, there's almost no failing. If you have a bad race, you don't really fail. You just have a bad race. But like, so because you're not afraid of failing...
You're winning more.
You just go full gas. Because you don't care if you lose.
No. That's...
You just want...
There's also the thing about... I try to learn my riders at the moment. It's like when you're afraid of failing, that's for sure you're all you're going to do.
Yeah.
Because when you're afraid of losing, it's like... Then all you can think is, I don't want to lose, and you're going to lose. It's just nature. It's not like... It's not... When you start thinking about, I take my chances, as like your guys today, one time you don't succeed, but the next time maybe you do.
Yeah.
And you, if you don't do that, and not thinking about the risk, if I get caught, I get dropped, or now I'm in the front, I didn't win, and what does the team director say, and all these things, you're like, if you don't.
For me,
I never blame my riders to try. It's like, when they try, and they're trying, it's, maybe tactically we can learn about it, but if they're not trying, they will never succeed.
But I think sometimes they can almost cheat the system, because they can say, like today I forgot what rider, but there was a rider who's, I think, normally a pretty good climber, and he attacked... on the climb, maybe like with 10 kilometers ago, he attacked really early.
Yeah.
From the pack. I forget who. It's an American guy, I know.
From 5 Hour?
Maybe, yeah.
But it was because those two guys from in the front there, just before the climb.
And so he went, and it was like, sometimes they do that and they go, oh, well, I tried, but I tried early, you know, like whatever. But I think, that's not trying. I think you gave yourself an excuse. I think sometimes trying is to sit in and really put your balls on the line and say, like, if I don't make it, it'll be 100% clear that today I wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
And that's scary. That's a scary thought for people.
We have riders like that on our team. It's like, and also used to race with guys in the team that did like that.
Yeah.
When they're like... When the pressure was on, they were like doing stupid things, like you say, attacking the beginning.
Like if it's a sprinter and he leads out with 350 meters ago, 400
meters. Or pulling the bunch or whatever stupid things, just to say,
I helped the team.
Yeah.
I didn't feel good, so I helped the team. And you're like, that doesn't help the team.
No. Because what you agreed on in the morning or the day before, or even before that, that's what it should be.
Yeah.
And if you really don't have the legs, you can always have to change the tactic. But that's true that sometimes a lot of them, maybe also...
They cut their own throat, I think.
Yeah, just to say that, I tried, and but it was this and that, and trying to find excuses, you know?
I think if there's something where you have... almost normally no chance to win. If it's a summit finish and you've never won a summit finish in your life, I think it's something to go like on the early break. It's something to do this, you know? But I think if the team is counting or thinking that you should try for it. It takes balls. I don't mind if my riders go on the early breaks or whatever, but I want them to have balls too. Like if they just, I want them to know that, like, if they just lose 100% straight up in a bike race, like, I can't be mad.
No.
I just want to lose, like, correctly.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's trying to figure out how to...
No, but you're right, because trying is... Going all in for winning is something else, you know, it's like...
It's scary.
It can be scary, because if you fail, you fail big time.
Yeah.
and maybe you let down some of your teammates, but if you don't do it, it's the same.
Yeah.
Because if you're doing stupid things, it's not in the tactic, or you know you're never gonna win like that.
Yeah.
You let it down anyway, so.
Yeah. We had a guy when I was on Optum, we had a sprinter. And he used to be really fast, but you know how they get older, they're not as fast, they're more strong. So we had a guy, Candelario, who, when we first were teammates when I was 22, and then I went to another team, went to Postal Discovery, and he stayed more or less with the same team his whole career. So I came back, and he wasn't as fast anymore, but he just had the reputation of being fast. And he was probably the fastest guy on the team. So we would still, like, help him in the sprint. And it was amazing because, like, he would really pretty much know he couldn't win. You know? Like, he wouldn't say it, and the team wouldn't say it, but he was the fastest guy. So we would still help him out. And he would never, ever complain or say, like, I'm going to attack them with 400 meters to go and try to catch them sleeping or any of that shit. He would just say, okay, fine, I get the best results I can. And he would do it every time, and he would get 5th, 4th, 6th, 3rd, you know, like,
not
really. And then, like, I was always amazed at how much balls that took to just sit there and just say, like, to not tell the team to, like, no, don't work for me, fuck. It took a lot of guts to keep sprinting, you know? Like, because we had guys on the team that we fired because they can't win, so they just sit up. And then now the team, you know, best place finisher in the bunch sprint is 50th place, and you know.
That's not really... No, it's a lot of things you have to consider when you... Also, I reckon that now when you're on the other side of the table or in the car, it's... A lot of things are so much different.
Yeah.
But also, because you have, I've been in cycling so many years, so you see the things before they're coming, you know, you just know it. It's just, when you see the young guys trying to flip the system or doing something, you know, you've seen it before, it's like they're trying to play with an old dog, and you just know it.
I was like that. And that's my hard part. Is when I was a younger rider, I always thought I was smart. I thought I was the smartest guy. And now I fucking...
And I thought you could...
I thought I knew better than everybody.
And you like... I can like spin them like I want, but...
Yeah.
Like, we see it now.
Yeah.
Those days, I saw it as well. It's not like...
Yeah.
They didn't see it.
I remember doing... GP Tel, remember this?
Yeah.
And it was when carbon wheels were like, they were first new, you know?
Yeah.
And my team in the States gave me a set of carbon wheels, and I was so excited to have these for GP Tel. Like, these wheels were going to be my secret weapon.
Then you're going to win.
And I'm going to win with these wheels. So we do like 110 kilometers, double stage. We go 110 kilometers to a town, and then you stay there for 3 hours, have lunch, and then race 110 kilometers back, and it finishes on top of a mountain.
Sure.
And this Belgian mechanic, he comes to me before the start, and he points at my tire. It's tubular on this carbon wheel, and it's big skid mark.
Yeah.
And he goes, you can't race with this wheel. Look at this mark. And I'm like, no, we have to race with this wheel. Like, absolutely. So this trick that we had in the States is that you would put, like, super glue, you know, over the mark. So you put glue over it. And I told him, like, we just put glue on this. We put glue over it, and the mechanic goes, and he talks to the director talks to me, and I'm 100% like, no, I need this fucking wheel. This wheel's everything. And I still remember the look of the mechanic's face, you know? And he told me, he's like, you will not finish on this wheel. You will not finish. I did finish on the wheel. I got 3rd place.
Yeah.
But I think about that a lot now. Like, if that were to happen to me today, how I would react.
Yeah. You wouldn't let him.
I wouldn't let him.
No.
No way.
No.
And I think about that, like, wow, how many people from my youth do I have to call and apologize to for making them go
That's maybe, yeah, I don't know. It's maybe part of the game that you had to grow up, you had to learn. I think that's okay.
When you look back at you when you were from like 19 to 26, do you think you're the same person?
No.
No? How are you different?
In many ways. It's like that you said that now you know things that you didn't know before, and you have the experience of in life. So when you were young, you, like you say, you think you could like fool people or just being smart.
Yeah.
Now you know this. It's not gonna be anyway like that.
Sometimes you use like people's, not their weaknesses, but you use, some people just out of politeness, they just back down. And I think there are people who, I think I was like that, who use that against people. If you just hold your position, you knew that if you just held your position eventually, because most people are polite and nice, and that they'll back down.
But also, reckon that I a lot of times trying to be nice and polite, I was disappointing people in the way that I think I'm more like, when I have my opinion, it's like I stick to it.
Yeah,
I try to listen to other opinions, but when I, in the race or in the team, when I took a decision, I'm gonna stick to it.
Yeah.
Not that I'm gonna say no, don't wanna listen to anybody, but, and I think that's a way better way to do things, because when you're younger, you're like, but then you listen a little bit there, you listen a little bit there, and then you're like, you're not straight, and you can't be a leader like that. It's obvious, like, because then people's getting confused, and what are we going to do now? And then you try to say to this guy, yeah, but okay, we're gonna do like you want, and then you have to. So
yeah,
I think it's better that, and it also gives me troubles with some of the young Danish riders, because they think they can fool me now. It's like,
yeah,
they're smarter than me.
Yeah,
and that pisses me off. It's like, hey, you don't know who you're dealing with.
Yeah,
I've done those things. I've seen many guys trying doing it. It's never gonna work out.
Yeah.
It's like we have one big, really big talent, Danish talent, and in Cologne, just before our series of really important races to get into Tour of Denmark, he crashed. It was a really good shape, crashed and broke his collarbone. Bad luck. We got him operated. Went back to Denmark. I went with him to the hospital, got him operated, and so on that. And then he was supposed to be a lot faster back, you know, because that's the
operation. Yeah,
operations, like when you do that. And then after, he should have been back on just, you know, how you call it, a fixed bike, you know, just
sure.
After a week, he should have done it, but he didn't. I said, no, it's hurting too much, and I didn't know, so I was like, okay, I'll let you. After 2.5 weeks, he started on the fixed bike, and then again, he started on the road, and I just let him, because he was in good shape, and I thought, this is a regular guy, and he's doing everything he can to come back. Then at this moment, we have a team in Korea, and for like 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, I called him and said that he was supposed to go to Korea, and then when we're coming home from here, we have the Danish Championship team time trial, selection race, and then the championship. So this week is like super important now. No, I promise you that I don't want to go to Korea, but I'm gonna be prepared. I'm going to Italy. I'm doing everything to be prepared for those races. I was like, I did before, so I'll let him.
Yeah.
Then made the team for the team time trial, and he wrote the manager that this wasn't the deal. He didn't call me, didn't write me anything.
He didn't want to do the team time trial.
He didn't want to do the team time trial. But he was ready for the day after the selection race. I said, how come that you can be ready Sunday and not Saturday?
Yeah.
You're letting your teammates down. No, but it was not the deal. And his father was in it and he's playing like...
His father?
Yeah, yeah.
Oy.
We have to deal also with parents here. Like, it's horrible. And anyway, the communication was the way he responded was so bad that the team manager one time had to write him that he wouldn't let him write like that to a director. Yeah. So little respect. It was like,
yeah,
what is this?
Yeah,
this is Bo is the director. He's asking you to come to work.
Yeah,
what's the big deal?
Yeah.
Now he wants to get out of the team. It's like,
do you think he was doing that on purpose to get out of the team? Like maybe that was a strategy.
Yeah.
I'll piss everybody off, they'll let me go.
But the thing is that in the contract they have to send me the training data.
Yeah.
They're supposed to do it every week, but I let them do it every 2 weeks, every month, or even though. Then they can have their own trainer. I don't know mind.
Yeah.
If they want that I do the training, I do it. But you cannot do it for everybody. So for me it's okay that they have their own trainer. But I need to know what they're doing. And then, like yesterday, he sent me his files. And I understand why he wouldn't.
He wasn't doing the work.
He was maximum doing 3 hours.
Yeah.
Training with his father, never doing any works, nothing.
Yeah.
He's not just prepared. And that's the thing about, they think they can cheat the system, but it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
But it's disappointing that these young people really had a good chance. You have faith in them, and then they let everybody down. And now,
do you think that now
they're trying like it's me as a sports director? That's the bad one. Huh?
Do you think that young people have? I mean, it has to have been that young people have always been like this. It's not like a new phenomenon.
Change.
You think?
Yeah, I don't know in the States because. But in Denmark, it's not only cyclists, it's all young people. Because failure is not an issue in Denmark, because there's always like insurance that the Denmark is going to take care of you.
Yeah.
You're never going to live on the street, you're never going to not have a car, all the system is going to take care of you. So it's like,
it's fine.
It's okay. Even without work, I'm okay. I'm not making huge money, but still have a little bit money to travel, and it's okay.
Yeah.
And I totally agree on that the system is okay, that if you get sick or you lose your job for a certain period, you should have an insurance that you can continue your life, but not forever.
Yeah.
And that's the way that these young people grow up, so they know there's a system also.
Yeah.
So also when they fail in cycling, it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Because there's always this system takes care of me.
Yeah.
And that's a big mistake. And then they have the parents, like, you know the sport? In Denmark it's a little bit curling. They do it on ice.
Yeah.
With this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then they do like this.
Yeah.
In Denmark we call these children curling children. Because the parents are just always
sweeping the way.
Sweeping the way always, like... No, when they come into trouble, like, we clean the way, and they always, no, also in school, you know? It's like, no, it's not my child, it's not my little Peter that's wrong, it's the teacher.
Yeah.
And then...
They call him helicopter parents here, because he just hover.
Yeah.
And just, no, dude, we're going to sound like the oldest fuckers in the world, but I remember if the parent, or the teachers called my parents... I was shit scared.
Yeah, because my
parents would yell at you.
Yeah, they would give me the shit. They don't do it.
But no, now the parents call the teacher.
Yeah.
And say, why did you?
Huh.
Why did you do it?
How can you?
How can you?
My little Johnny is the best Johnny.
I know for sure that he didn't do that.
No.
No, you don't.
I remember knowing that the teachers were going to call my parents and taking the phones, like unplugging the cord.
Yeah.
And I would unplug. Yeah. And then the parents would always ask, where's the report card? I'd be like, I don't know. Isn't that weird? That's so strange. They haven't given me one. Because that school needs to get their shit together.
Actually, it's not the fault of the kids. It's the fault of parents because they're not doing a favor. It's like, because life is gonna be tough.
Yeah.
Imagine even living in a marriage or something with a person like that.
Mm.
It must be horrible because they always have a question why. Why do I have to do that?
Yeah.
No, we can also do that.
I don't need to do that.
I will do only what I want to do.
Yeah.
I'm here. I'm the center of the world. The world is... I'm the center. I'm the really big, epic center. I think that's really wrong. You have to earn that people have respect for you and...
You have kids, huh?
I have three kids.
Three kids. And you try to be as...
Different.
Do you see, like, do you worry about them getting influenced?
For sure you think a lot of not being like that, but you should also take care of not being like, not supporting them.
Yeah.
Because my son, I have two daughters and a son. The son is one of a twin sister. And he's like, in October last year, he started riding his bike. And now he's... I was doing some races and just begun and he played football before that, you know, soccer, and he's okay, but I'm so afraid being that father, you know, that old rider that is like too much.
Yeah,
that I know that for sure sometimes I'm not supporting him enough.
Yeah, you'd rather err on the other side than to be call up all your friends, get him the best race bike, get him into some team.
Yeah. And that, in a way, I have to take care of that because it shouldn't be a disadvantage to be a son of mine. When you're a cyclist, it's like, that should be really stupid. Yeah. When you was playing soccer, I couldn't do anything. I don't know anything about soccer.
You're a normal parent.
I'm a normal. But here it's like, people's looking at me and I'm so afraid of that. Being one of those.
Yeah.
When I saw when I was a kid that this parents was like horrible.
Yeah.
I don't want to be like that, but you should also always.
You're still a parent.
I'm still a parent. I have to give him the best he deserves, but I'm so afraid of that. It's like.
Yeah.
That I know if I'm still here in this team next year, I need to have a meeting before the season with the kids.
Yeah.
The like grown up. Maybe young people, but and their parents.
Yeah.
Before the season. And then I need to say that this is the only time that I'm going to communicate with them.
Yeah, fuck.
But otherwise, it's horrible. It's like, then you got an email from a mother or a phone call from a father, and you know, it's like.
Fuck, I couldn't even imagine.
That's really bad.
That's really bad.
And a lot of times the riders don't even know it.
Yeah, I think the parents probably want to keep it that way.
Yeah. But that's not the way to go.
Mm.
Imagine being a normal job that the parents
are just calling at the factory.
Yeah.
Hey, my son, he doesn't like his current position at the factory.
No.
He's so much better. He's more of management.
Yeah.
He needs a window in his office.
Yeah. Now with this guy that was supposed to do the team time trial, he wants to get out of the team because he can't work with a director like that.
Yeah.
Because I'm so bad, I'm lying, I'm doing everything to put him out of the game.
Yeah.
And all I did is trying to get him in the game. And also because I know when... Because he's a big talent, but if he continues like that, he's just gonna run out. It's just wasting time because
sometimes when you're that talented and you don't have to like struggle, when you never had difficulties until later in life.
Yeah.
Your problem solving skills are horrible.
Yeah, because I see it also in this guy, for instance. He's like, he's still one of the biggest talent in Denmark, but when he was like 2-3 years ago, he was unbeatable. He was like winning everything.
Yeah.
I was like, this is gonna be the new whatever in Denmark.
Yeah, but if Saxo Banks and stuff's not touching him, then maybe he's already has a reputation of being difficult, huh?
He is.
Yeah.
He was with our team 2 years ago, changed him last year. Now he's back with our team, and now he's going to get out of it.
Like, yeah.
And then his father has a bad reputation, so it's like...
Yeah.
It's...
There's a guy like that in the States who he can win a lot of races and sprints, and he was on pretty much the America's best domestic team last year. And I think he won probably...
How many teams do they actually have in America?
Continental teams, I think 7 or 8.
Yeah?
Yeah. Pro continental.
But I mean, we have last year we had 7 in Denmark.
Yeah.
I mean,
but
we have 5 million people.
I think
that was too much. Now we're 5 and maybe it's 1 too much.
Maybe, yeah, but I don't know how they do it in Denmark, but I think a lot of the professional teams are like criterium based.
Yeah.
So the ones that go to stage races, maybe 4 or 5. I mean, because there's a whole separate calendar of national criteriums.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
that's big, or?
They're trying to make it big.
Yeah.
The problem is, I think for these criteriums, is that the medalist races came in. So you have Tour California, Tour Utah, Tour Colorado, Tour of Alberta. And they get so much viewership that sponsors, all they want is to go to these races.
Oh.
So now they don't care about criteriums.
Oh.
So it's hard for pro teams like mine. So like last year, this team was a completely criterium team.
Okay.
100% criterium. And then...
When did you join the team?
Just before Tour of Alberta last year.
Okay, so that's also...
So I went to Tour of Alberta, and then they're like, we put these criterium guys, mainly criterium guys, into a stage race.
Hmm. Oh, that's different.
And Tour Alberta, you know, they have like, you know, Peter Sagan and Garmin, you know, like all these guys. You're like, you saw the bit of a gap.
Right.
Not that they couldn't eventually close the gap. I think a lot of those guys could.
Hmm.
But it was just, it's hard when your job is to close the gap immediately.
Right.
So you have to... So I think it's hard because you have, you know, Tour of Colorado, you know, how many million people watch it every day.
Mm.
And the criteriums, I think, normally would be very popular, but the fucking medalist races are so popular. They're everything.
Yeah.
They're everything. So, I don't know where... So there are a lot of pro teams.
Yeah.
But then... It's hard to be a Division III team, too. Because, like, so if I want to go to a medalist race, and I want to be competitive, I mean, okay, we'll never win the overall.
No.
But, like, to get a team that can maybe get the climber's jersey.
Win a stage, maybe.
Versus going to the criteriums. And then you add in with the age restriction, the nationality restriction.
No.
It's impossible. It's impossible to do both well.
Hmm.
So, you know, we've done a couple national criteriums, and we do okay. We've gotten, like, second and third in a couple of them, but, yeah.
But otherwise, lately, it's been good for the team, huh?
What's that?
Otherwise, it's been really good for the team lately,
huh? Yeah, I mean, I got lucky that the market was so bad.
Because
you could pick up really good riders, like Yuri. Yuri, I mean, the guy's got fourth in Strade Bianche. And that's a real race, you know.
That's a real race.
Yeah, he won Pino Cerami. That's a real race.
Yeah.
I always laugh, like, because unless you, like, most cycling fans don't know Pino Cerami.
No, but...
But if you're a bike racer,
you know
how fucking hard that race is. Yeah. You know, like, Yuri, he's won stages in Trois de Bessèges. And again, a race nobody fucking knows.
No, but...
But If you're a bike racer,
you know,
those races like scare you.
Yeah, that's true.
They're like,
now the market's been really, really awesome. You know that, like, all winters just ticking in mails that, please take me, please take me. Also, the Spaniards is like, I'll ride for free and don't need anything, you know. And,
yeah.
But then again, we need.
You need Danish guys.
We need Danish guys. Even though it's so hard to work with them, and they ask a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean this is.
Because they know that we need them.
Yeah.
A lot of money. I mean, to
reasonable.
This,
yeah.
To this for this level, it's this a lot level, of money. Yeah. I mean.
About how much is your highest paid rider?
It's like 40,000 euros.
Yeah, we're like the same. Isn't that crazy to think? They're your highest paid guy is that.
Mm.
And you go to Pro Continental, Pro Tour, you know?
Yeah. But, I mean, Continental team, like the structure was built up, was like, what is supposed to pay that kind of money for the riders? Should be the gap between an amateur and being a real pro.
Yeah.
But because it's so expensive to have a professional.
Yeah.
With all the blood pass and all these things.
Yeah.
So a lot of teams just stay Continental, but even though, like our team.
Yeah.
Even if we have maybe structure for and the budget is bigger than a lot of other teams.
Yeah.
But still, I don't know. It shouldn't be a lot of money because even when you think about the risking their life riding the bike.
Yeah.
It's maybe one of the hardest sports in the world.
Yeah.
And then they take this kind of money. So it's like, but I don't know. It's the way it is.
We have, you know, your riders. Do your riders, like, they ever come to you with questions about your past? Or do they just...
No.
They never?
No.
Why is that beeping?
I'm not even talking a lot about it.
Yeah.
But they don't, like, question it. I use it sometimes in this doping discussion. Like, when I just tell them that if you think you can cheat and flick the system, you're wrong.
Yeah.
It's always gonna get you, sooner or later.
Yeah, on a long enough timeline, it'll get you.
It's like what you do now doesn't necessarily come out now. But you see, like, I was in the names from the tour from 98.
Yeah.
In 2013, it's like 15 years after.
Like, yeah.
And some guys lost their job because of that. Yeah. And maybe you're on with your another life, and then a story comes out.
From a completely different life.
Yeah. So that's not going to happen. It's always going to get you. I think I use that as an example, like, because it's been in this period, like, this, we all been, like, talking out of what happened when we were racing, and people is like, oh, but these guys, they can't have anything to do with cycling because they've done it, and, yeah, I admit I've done it, but it can also be a good example of what could happen to you. It's like,
yeah,
for sure it's going to happen if you do the same as I did.
Yeah.
Then it's going to be, you're going to be caught sooner or later.
Yeah, if you're allowed to talk about your experiences. Because, I mean, surely there would have to have been, like, you know, man, like, you go from, you had the Tour yellow jersey, like, you have great results, you know, and then to go from, you know, the top to being, like, cast aside so quickly, like, that has to be some kind of story that of caution that you can tell people.
Yeah, but that's but also I sincerely feel that that's one thing I like about the young Danish riders for the moment. They have a completely different view on that.
Yeah.
I really don't think that anybody of these guys in our team is doing anything.
Yeah.
You can never be 100% sure because then you have to, I don't know what you have to do. do that. It's not possible.
It's not possible.
But I really think that the mentality has changed a lot.
I think a lot in because the culture.
Because when I was in the 90s, I can't say it was cool to do it, but it wasn't uncool.